get ready for an hour of fishing, hunting, and outdoor events from all over the great state of Alabama. It's time for Alabama's Great Days Outdoors Radio Show. Join Joe Baia with Great Days Outdoors Magazine and his special guests as they bring you the latest weekly updates from the woods and the water. Alabama's Great Days Outdoors is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Now, here's Joe Baia.
Good morning, Alabama. Welcome to Alabama's Great Days Outdoors Radio Show.
We've got some great fishing reports for you this week. And new to the show, we've got co-host now, Butch Theory. Butch, co-host with me over on the Alabama Saltwater Fishing Report podcast. I'm happy to have him joining me now and for the future. Butch, glad to have you on, man.
Man, I'm glad to be on, Joe. Excited about it.
Well, man, let's don't wait around. It's been tough out there. We got a lot of water still coming down. Water's still pretty muddy, but we have found some fishing for you guys. So let's get right into it. We're talking with Wayne Miller today. Wayne, normally you're talking to us about the Delta, but where are you this week?
Well, buddy, I tell you what. Start off, I'd like to say hey to Butch. Great to have you on board, Butch.
And thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. You know, a lot of the bass guys obviously have been had to kind of transition a little further south. You know, the rivers down, you know, along the bay on both the east and west side, you know, have really filled up with a lot of fishermen over the last couple of weeks. You know, the good news though, man, I mean, we're seeing, you know, the water, we hadn't had any real heavy local rains. So that's really clean that water up on those rivers. You know, I've been on Fish River a few days, Fowl River, Dog River. I mean, there's plenty of places to go, and the water's in good shape. You know, the majority of guys I've been talking to, you know, it's really been a fairly shallow game here the last week. I mean, a lot of fish being caught on spinner baits and even some swim baits. But, you know, the soft plastic is probably your most, you know, your best bet from the standpoint of going out and catching numbers. You know, it's still working really good. And I've been primarily using creature baits and a June bug or a black and red color. And that's been working great. But, you know, from the standpoint of the Delta itself, you know, we still, even though the rivers are falling, and, you know, I know the last couple of nights they've talked about it on the news. I know a lot of people are hearing it on the radio and on the TV, but, you know, don't get misled by the fact that the rivers are falling. It's still high and muddy. But when that water does fall out, obviously, you know, the lower end of the Delta along the causeway will be the first area that really picks back up. And you've got a lot of creeks and, you know, bays down there that have a tremendous amount of grass in them. And that really helps filter that water and it'll clean up fairly quickly.
Wayne, I know you've got Butch's attention because he lives on Fowl River. I grew up on Fowl River. So, and I bass fished it some. I've predominantly been a saltwater fisherman, but I did do some bass fishing there and I never was terribly successful. I caught my fair share of fish, but you know, when you're fishing in these estuaries off Mobile Bay this time of year, are you pushing way back up into the river or are you finding those fish? Where are you finding those fish? Closer to the mouth or way back up in?
You know, the biggest challenge for people, you know, fishing those, especially, you know, on low tide, is those fish really pull out and they'll concentrate on drops, on outside bends. And obviously, anytime you can find an isolated piece of wood in that magic 4 to 8 feet of water, it's going to have fish on it. Now, this is the one time of year on this Delta when you really need to depend on some electronics, you know, and you don't have to have, you know, anything that, you know, shows you 8x10 color glossy of a bass. You know, what I look for is I idle along up through these, you know, creeks and, like I say, the outside bends and look for drop-offs off these big flats. And when I start seeing, you know, balls of bait, I start seeing fish on there. You know, I just back off and start throwing crankbait, throw, you know, spinnerbait. you know, work some soft plastic. It's amazing how many times you can do that, and it doesn't take but, you know, an hour or two, and all of a sudden you figure out where these fish are positioned on a particular outside bend, and then you go right up or down the river, and you can reproduce that.
Wayne, what's your go-to spinnerbait right now as far as leaf blade configuration?
Right now I'm just throwing a half to a three-quarter ounce willow leaf, because, you know, when I throw that spinnerbait, I'm just letting it really get deep. You know, I'm just slow rolling it. And, you know, I don't want a lot of resistance. I don't want big cup blades. And you can scale down, even if you go to like a half or a three-quarter ounce body on your spinnerbait, you can scale down on those willow leaf blades, and that helps you get the depth quicker and helps keep the bait down there. Because if you use these big, you know, willow blades, you know, it tends to make the bait rise as you, you know, reel it.
That makes sense. Well, that's Captain Wayne Miller. Wayne, thanks for the report this week.
Okay, guys. Y'all have a great one.
Thanks, Captain Wayne.
All right, Butch, I always like talking to Wayne Miller, man. That guy knows bass fishing. It's cool to see we got some fish down in these Mobile Bay rivers, and that's a good opportunity for you. You need to get off your butt and get out there.
I do. Fishing. I need to get out my bass tackle.
Well, let's switch gears totally, man. Let's go all the way down and talk with Scott Kennedy. Scott's going to be giving us kind of the onshore report. Scott, you've been doing a good bit of kayak fishing here lately. Tell me a little bit about what's been going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that rain we had a few weeks ago kind of made things tough for us for a little bit, but had, you know, a good solid week of good winds and, you know, no more rain. So starting to clean the water up and starting to find some trout around again. You know, best time of the day we've been finding for those is either right as the sun's breaking day or right as it's setting. So been catching those on top water. You know, the sheephead bite starting to pick up pretty good too. We've been catching a good amount of sheephead, and you know, from a kayak, that's about as fun as it can get. It's basically, you know, inshore snapper fishing.
Yeah, sheephead are awesome fighters. They're a little finicky as far as getting them to bite. So what have you guys been doing to get more bites?
I'm going, scaling everything way down. You know, I'm using size 4, size 6 hooks, single split shot, you know, 10 to 15 pound fluoro, just getting it as about as finesse as you can get and still, you know, be able to hold up to the fish.
Where are you finding the sheep's head right now?
You know, any of the mouths of these kind of tidal rivers have been good. Anywhere you can find a good mass of pilings, you know, old marinas, anything like that, you know, bridge overpasses. That's been kind of key. I like to look for the concrete pilings. I favor those a little bit more, but you'll still find a good amount on the wood pilings and everything as well.
You always see the guys that, you know, they talk about taking a paddle or something and kind of scraping those barnacles off of that structure they're fishing around. Are y'all doing any of that? Is that necessary right now?
Oh yeah. You know, some days we hadn't had to do it quite as much. You know, just do it kind of one time as you pull up and seems to get them fired up. Other days, you know, we're having to scrape a good amount, you know, really, really chum the waters, but it's kind of just been playing it by feel. You know, it seems like more days than not, they've wanted a lot of the barnacle scraping, but you know, some days just on the same hand, we hadn't had to do it hardly at all there. I'm sorry.
What about bait? You know, we were talking with Dusty Hayes last week, and he gave us a really cool tip as far as dealing with hermit crabs. What are you guys using for bait right now?
You know, we've been using a lot of shrimp, just mainly because, you know, that's been the easiest availability lately. My bait of choice, though, has got to be fiddler crabs. If I can get fiddler crabs in the boat, I'm going with fiddler crabs.
What do you like to do to get those?
You know, the easiest thing is to find the shop that's selling them. Other than that, you know, a lot of the same places we'll be fishing for these sheephead and redfish and stuff. If you pay attention to the bank, there's usually going to be a few of them up there too.
What about the redfish? I know we've had a heck of a year on redfish. It seems like it's been kind of the bright spot lately in what hasn't been a lot of good fishing reports. Are y'all doing okay on redfish? How's that going?
Yeah, you know, we're still catching some redfish. You know, these real cold nights have kind of slowed them down a little bit. We're catching them a little later into the day. But, yeah, there's still been plenty of redfish. You know, they kind of – that was what was holding us on through all the rainy weeks. You know, the redfish don't get quite as affected from the rainwater and everything as the trout do. But, yeah, still catching tons of redfish too.
That's awesome. Awesome. Good to hear. Well – Scott, you are running Whistling Waters Kayak and Charters. What can folks do if they want to book a trip, and what do you recommend this time of year as far as, you know, time of day if they're just wanting to get out? When are you finding the best bite? Besides from, you know, what you said with the trout fishing being first thing, what time of day is working best for you right now?
Yeah, if y'all are interested in, you know, looking at a trip, you can check us out on Facebook at Whistling Waters Kayak Fishing, or you can go to our website at whistlingwaters.com. And as far as time of the day, you know, the afternoons have been a little bit better, especially with these colder nights. Like I said, you know, as the water has time to warm up and everything, the fishing gets a little bit better. So I would suggest afternoons, but, you know, we can catch fish just about all day.
All right, that's Scott Kennedy. Scott, thanks for the report. Folks, y'all stick around. After the break, we're going to be taking some more fishing reports. Y'all stay right here.
Great Days Outdoors Magazine is Alabama's leader in hunting and fishing information. Each month, you'll see a variety of articles from small game to big game, hunting and fishing. They even have game and fish recipes each month. Learn the latest tactics for hunting and fishing. From polywogs to gator trout, they've covered your outdoors for over 20 years. Specializing in how-to articles written by the best Alabama writers. Whatever your game, include Great Days Outdoors in your strategy. Subscribe online at greatdaysoutdoors.com and visit them on Facebook.
Dolphin Island Marina at the foot of the Dolphin Island Bridge is situated conveniently between the Intercoastal Waterway and Mobile Bay. Wet and dry slips are available in this 235-slip marina with all the amenities you need. Kayak, paddleboard, and pontoon boat rentals are available, as well as a restaurant and South Mobile County's best live bait shop. Dolphin Island Marina is a great starting point for your vacation adventure, whether coastal cruising or fishing, from your boat or with one of their professional charter captains. You'll find it all at Dolphin Island Marina on Dolphin Island at the foot of the bridge.
The Alabama Great Days Outdoors Tip of the Week. Every bass fisherman knows a good supply of wooden toothpicks will help you catch more fish. If you're bass fishing with a Texas-rigged worm, try inserting a toothpick in the front of the bullet weight. Once the bullet weight is tight to the fishing line, break the toothpick off. This keeps your weight from slipping down the line when you drag it over logs and stumps under the water. You won't get hung up nearly as often, and you can spend more time catching fish rather than being hung up. And catching fish is what it's all about.
If you own a business in Alabama and want to reach the outdoors market with advertising on Alabama's Great Days Outdoor Radio Show, call 877-314-1237. Our show reaches all over Alabama, and your message will reach your targeted market. Radio ads can be combined with ads in Great Days Outdoors Magazine and reach an even larger audience. Call 877-314-1237 to get all the details. That's 877-314-1237, or visit greatdaysoutdoors.com today.
Welcome back to Alabama's Great Days Outdoors with Joe Baia, brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Once again, here's Joe.
And welcome back to the show. We got some more good fishing reports, and I'll use that in quotations. They're good because they're real.
How about valid?
Valid's a better word. Valid fishing reports coming up. Fishing's tough right now. You know, January is a tough month. For fishing. A lot of folks are deer hunting, and that's probably not a bad decision this weekend. But that's what we do here, man. We bring the real fishing report, and we've got Patrick Garmison on the line. It's probably pretty fitting with ugly fishing. It's pretty ugly fishing right now, isn't it, Patrick?
And that's why I chose the charter name Ugly Fishing, because, you know, sometimes it is. It's really ugly. And, you know, it's kind of weird this time of year when a lot of times the uglier fishing days are on the prettier weather days. Seems like when you can get a bite, it seems like they're usually feeding during those weather changes. Maybe fingers crossed, we can find a few speckled trout this weekend for my winter classic tournament.
Tell us about the Winter Classic tournament.
All right, so we're going to have the weigh-in up at the Bluegill, 4 o'clock on Saturday, 3 o'clock on Sunday, 2 day combined weight, 5 fish each day, 2-man teams. It looks like I've got a couple of teams going solo. God rest their soul, I think. let me tell you, it's more than challenging out here right now. All the river water we got from up in the Delta and all over upstate, plus had the cumulative effect of having the local rainfall at the same time, has moved these fish into areas that I have not been able to find. And I've talked to many other captains and other fishermen that are feeling the same struggle.
So, I think it's going to be hot and rainy on Saturday too, isn't it?
Yeah, hot and rainy Saturday. South wind, probably 20 to 30 miles an hour. Then Sunday, it looks like we've got, looks like we're going to have highs in the 40s and probably 30 to 40 mile an hour north wind. So there's nothing like some massive weather changes to, you know, it's difficult enough to pattern the fish on one day, and then to have to flip, you know, the complete polar opposite weather pattern the next day and still be able to bring in 5 fish. It's going to be interesting.
So Patrick, in this tournament, is this a live weigh-in or do you do both?
Yeah. So we actually award bonus points for live fish. Speckled trout are difficult to keep alive. So instead of penalizing a team that just is unable to keep their fish alive, we actually just reward those that take the extra effort to make sure that they stay alive. And in many cases, that can decide, it could decide a fifth place between a fifth place and a second place, or a third place and first place. I mean, we usually have some really tight races. This will be my fifth annual event, and I guarantee you the winner of the event always has most of their fish alive, unless they really got lucky. But I'm pretty sure we've had a lot of live fish for the winners. So
Patrick, I know speckled trout have been hard to come by, but the fish that you are catching, is there any pattern to it?
I wish there was for me. It's been the few that have come aboard the boat have been like one on a grub in 18 feet of water and one on a slick lure in 3 feet of water. It's just really just even getting bites has been a doozy for me. Hopefully this changes. I'm gonna go kind of run back through some areas where I have been successful lately over the next couple of days and see if I can dial in on any kind of pattern. Really, at this point, I just need to be able to catch 5 fish and feel comfortable in going back there on Saturday.
Yeah, it sounds like anybody that can put together 5 fish is going to have a shot. You know, one of the things I like about what you do, Patrick, is you don't always focus on speckled trout and redfish. You do some other types of fishing as well. We were talking a little bit earlier with Scott Kennedy, who does a lot of kayak fishing. And Scott was saying that the sheep's head bite has been really good. You've got a really cool article coming up in the February edition of Great Days Outdoors on the sheep's head fishing. I'm looking aptly titled, How to Catch Sheep's Head. And, you know, I want to talk about that a little bit and get a little bit more in depth on sheephead in particular. You know, this time of year, what are they doing? You know, we know that in March and April, we're going to find those fish out on the rigs and reefs in Mobile Bay and kind of moving out into, you know, coastal Gulf waters. What are those fish doing right now?
Well, I think we're actually having a positive response from all the flood water in the sheephead, because they're naturally going to be moving towards the Gulf and the higher salinity waters, kind of as a slow migration that usually starts around Thanksgiving is when I start seeing them start to to pull out of the Delta. And but I think all of this bad water kind of sped things up in areas down around around the mouth of Mobile Bay, around the rigs down there, and then like down around the pass at over in Perdido. These fish are just, I think they're just a little bit ahead of schedule, and there's just a bunch of them moving to those areas at the same time and really creating a good environment for a fisherman looking to stretch his line a little bit.
Are the water temperatures playing a role in that? What are water temps doing right now? Is the rain having an effect on that?
I think it's about where it should be. We're around 55 to 57. Some areas you might feel a little bit warmer than that. But for the most part, I think the bulk of the bay is around 57 degrees. And ideally, their spawn is going to happen once that water stabilizes over like 62 is usually when you'll see it. I tell you, the best indicator to when the spawn is going to be in full swing is when the native azaleas, the indica azaleas, when they go into full bloom. That's usually the on land indication is that the sheephead bite or that the sheephead spawn is in full swing. So a little phenological fact for you.
How about that? I've never heard that. I like it.
Well, let's talk about bait a little bit. Scott was saying that he really likes fiddler crabs, but he was also talking about that he's been using shrimp. When I hear guys talking about clams, and I hear them, you know, talking about all different kinds of bait for sheep's head, what do you like?
If I can get my hands on fiddler crabs, that's my favorite.
That's two votes for fiddler crabs, Butch. You keeping tally?
Trying to figure out where I can get them online right now.
Let me know where you find them.
Amazon ship you a container to your door.
I was trying to see if the Amazon Prime would do that, but I'm not sure yet. I'll let you know, Patrick.
Well, let me tell you what. I think fiddler crabs are just a good all-around bait. I mean, they're you're going to find them a lot of times hanging out on pilings and stuff where the sheephead are also hanging out. So it's a really common crab that they're going to find to eat this time of year. You don't have a lot of problems with trash fish. You don't have pin fish or bluefish is a common other fish you'll find out there, or the grunts and stuff like that. They just don't mess with those little fiddler crabs. And really, you key in on sheephead and redfish will eat them as well. So you have a real specific bait type that both of those fish really love. So that's my top bait.
Well, Patrick, thanks for your report today, man. Folks, if y'all want to see Patrick's article, just pick up A Great Day's Outdoors wherever you get your magazines. Patrick, be safe out there and good luck with the tournament this weekend. Folks, we're going to take a break. Y'all stick around.
Great Days Outdoors magazine is Alabama's leader in hunting and fishing information. Each month, you'll see a variety of articles from small game to big game, hunting and fishing. They even have game and fish recipes each month. Learn the latest tactics for hunting and fishing. From polywogs to gator trout, they've covered your outdoors for over 20 years. Specializing in how-to articles written by the best Alabama writers. Whatever your game, include Great Days Outdoors in your strategy. Subscribe online at greatdaysoutdoors.com and visit them on Facebook.
Dolphin Island Marina at the foot of the Dolphin Island Bridge is situated conveniently between the Intercoastal Waterway and Mobile Bay. Wet and dry slips are available at this 235-slip marina with all the amenities you need. Kayak, paddleboard, and pontoon boat rentals are available, as well as a restaurant and South Mobile County's best live bait shop. Dolphin Island Marina is a great starting point for your vacation adventure. Whether coastal cruising or fishing, from your boat or with one of their professional charter captains, you'll find it all at Dolphin Island Marina on Dolphin Island at the foot of the bridge.
The Alabama Great Days Outdoors Tip of the Week.
Baseball players use black face paint under their eyes in certain situations. This also works great when used as camouflage on your face and hands if you don't have a mask or gloves. When the hunt is over, have a box of wet wipes in the back of the truck, and you can clean yourself up before you go back into civilization. Bow hunters and duck hunters always need extra camo on the face and hands, and this roll-on product is an inexpensive alternative to the products sold especially for that purpose. Keep it in your backpack, and you can always camo up.
If you own a business in Alabama and want to reach the outdoors market with advertising on Alabama's Great Days Outdoor Radio Show, call 877-314-1237. Our show reaches all over Alabama, and your message will reach your targeted market. Radio ads can be combined with ads in Great Days Outdoors Magazine and reach an even larger audience. Call 877-314-1237 to get all the details. That's 877-314-1237 or visit greatdaysoutdoors.com today.
This is Alton Jones, and you're listening to Alabama's Great Days Outdoor Radio.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. Today, we have got a special guest on the show with us today. Ammon Kenny and his dog Woodrow have tracked literally hundreds of wounded deer across Alabama and probably into states outside of Alabama. And what Ammon has learned is really how to break down a blood trail and all the different myriad of ways that hunters are making mistakes in tracking their deer that we don't want you to make. We got a really good weekend coming up. The peak of the rut is going to be going down here in South Alabama. We got some really cold temperatures. There's going to be a lot of deer that are going to be shot. So y'all listen closely to what Ammon's got to say, and think about that whenever you take your next shot. So Ammon, welcome to the show. I know you – tell me a little bit about Woodrow, man. What kind of dog is Woodrow?
All right, well, thanks for having me. Woodrow is 4 years old now. He's really a crossbreed, nothing special. And I got him for free, and you know, I got him specifically to track deer with, and I just really hoped and prayed that he would enjoy it as much as I wanted him to. And now I think he just uses me to get to the next deer track more than he likes me. So he is all hunt, and he the only thing he wants to do is to go find a deer.
I love it. All right, so I want some quick stats. How many tracks has Woodrow been on this season?
Well, this season, we're probably between 90 and 100. I don't know the exact number. We have recovered 56 deer as of right now. I found three this morning. But we've recovered 56 deer for this season. We've found countless others that ran and ran and ran and, you know, weren't hurt bad enough to really make me want to go and, you know, chase them all night, because that gets tiring, to tell you the truth, to do that day after day. So we try and really focus on the ones that are injured very badly. And if they can outrun Woodrow for about 1,500 yards and not stop and turn to fight him because they're hurting, well, we kind of give them a pass.
That makes sense. Well, okay, so what's the longest successful track so far?
Well, I've tracked two deer that – we'll say, you know, we jumped them about 400 yards into the track. They're still alive, and it took about 3 miles, a little over 3 miles to kill them. The longest successful track of a deer that was dead at the end of the track, I believe, happened yesterday. The GPS showed a little over 1.3 miles. That deer was pushed a lot the night before. It was an archery shot. It was a shot a little far back. Even though he was leaving blood for the hunter to find, we kept getting pushed and pushed, and we ended up, you know, tracking him down through the back loading docks area where the big rigs come into some company, and across the concrete down the drive about 100 yards and the parking lot, across the main road and across a sidewalk and into a city park, and he was dead about 400 yards further behind a preschool. So
that's wild. It always amazes me how far those deer can go. They're so tough. They just won't quit.
Well, when they have a human after them, they definitely go into survival mode, and they're going to keep going as long as it takes. They're not going to just give up.
That's amazing. All right. What's the longest time period from initial shot to you starting a track that you've been successful with?
The longest time period that we've been successful and actually recovered the deer was about 32 hours.
Wow.
And, that was just last season, even. It was our last track of last season. I got a YouTube video of it up. But I wasn't too sure going into the track what was going to happen. It was going to be the last one of the season, so I told the guy, what the heck, let's go, you know, try it. And it had just started raining about 30 minutes before we got there, and it was raining hard the whole time. And fortunately, there was blood for about the first 1,500 yards, and the deer was over a mile away. He was shot through both front legs, and when we found him that long after the shot, he couldn't even hardly stand up. He was done for, so he was either going to lay there and starve to death or get eaten by coyotes, one or the other.
Well, that's good to know that folks have kind of a, you know, estimate.
A lot of time to play there, yeah.
Yeah, and when they need to make a decision to bring a dog in. And I mean, we all want that one-shot kill. I mean, no one wants to have to track a deer. But the reality is that it's not a slaughterhouse out there. Things don't go as planned always. And the unique perspective you've got is that you get to go on hundreds and have been on hundreds of tracks where you're hearing the hunter's account of what happened, and then you're getting to see the end result of where that deer was actually hit and what the hit site looked like. So let's break this down a little bit for everybody, and let's break down a blood trail and see what we can learn from you and Woodrow. So, you know, it all starts with the shot. And I hear the story, seems like every year, hunter shoots a deer, the deer drops immediately, hunter relaxes, he's feeling good, maybe he's walking to the deer, or maybe he's still sitting in his stand, and all of a sudden the deer jumps up, runs off, and never see it again. How many of these types of tracks do you take every year? Or do you even take that kind of track?
I will take that track if I have time. There are different things that can lead into that shot. One, a more common shot is a deer that's been shot and hit just above the spine, where it temporarily paralyzes the deer. And they can be on the ground anywhere from 10 seconds to 30 minutes and then get up and run off. Now, deer may struggle off, may drag its back legs, may run normal. I will still go track that deer if I have time, of course, if I'm, you know, if it's not just way too far away. And a lot of times, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but we have found that deer before because it's badly injured enough that, you know, he'll go 500 to 600 yards and lay up and he's, you know, still hurting. Some deer can shake that shot off, and, you know, it's not something that, is going to affect them the rest of their lives if it's high enough across the top of the back. Now, just because a deer falls down immediately does not mean that's where it's been hit every time. I've also learned that. So as far as once you get to the hit site, there are some things to look for that can let you know if that was your shot or not. But I will add one more thing. When I was younger, my dad told me, if you shoot the deer and if he's still moving, you shoot him again until he quits moving. Well, I have people call me and say, I watched this deer, and he was sitting there, and his head was up, and he kind of rolled it around, and I watched him for 5 minutes, and then he got up and, you know, took off. And I thought about shooting him again, but I thought he was dying. And look, there's no being too sure. Just, you know, shoot the deer again. I had somebody say that they trailed the deer 40 yards, and they saw it sitting down below them, and they would just, you know, this was 30 minutes, an hour later, and they thought, you know, they would give it time to die. And while they were sitting up there talking above it, deer got, you know, it's, they never recovered that deer. And, you know, that's one of those that if the deer's still looking alive, bullets aren't that expensive right now. You can shoot another one and have your big deer and feel good about it. You know, you're not just wasting a bullet.
I like that. A lot of guys think, you know, I don't want to mess up any more meat. And the reality is that, you know, having a little bit more messed up meat is better than having no meat at all, because you never find the deer. So,
or wound a deer and, well, you know, let him drag off and not
survive.
You
find it out, yeah, the meat spoils.
Right. And then you're super sick about it.
I'd say lesson one is reload, get back on target, and make sure that deer is going to stay down. Sounds like what you're saying.
Yes, and most people that are, you know, in that situation, they're normally shooting a big buck. You know, that's the ones we hear about. It was a big buck. And, you know, reasons for shooting it, I can't tell for everybody, but most people don't care about the meat when it's the big one they want for the wall. You know, I mean, go ahead and shoot it again. You're not going to ruin the cape or anything like that. You'll get your deer.
Well, Ammon, it's, right. I like where this is going. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue breaking down the blood trail. We're going to talk a little bit about the hit site. And when you get to the hit site, what you can learn from what you're finding there. So, folks, y'all stick around. We're going to be right back with Ammon McKinney and hearing all about the tales of Woodrow.
If you own a business in Alabama and want to reach the outdoors market with advertising on Alabama's Great Days Outdoor Radio Show, call 877-314-1237. Our show reaches all over Alabama, and your message will reach your targeted market. Radio ads can be combined with ads in Great Days Outdoors Magazine and reach an even larger audience. Call 877-314-1237 to get all the details. That's 877-314-1237, or visit greatdaysoutdoors.com today.
Dolphin Island Marina at the foot of the Dolphin Island Bridge is situated conveniently between the Intercoastal Waterway and Mobile Bay. Wet and dry slips are available at this 235-slip marina with all the amenities you need. Kayak, paddleboard, and pontoon boat rentals are available, as well as a restaurant and South Mobile County's best live bait shop. Dolphin Island Marina is a great starting point for your vacation adventure. Whether coastal cruising or fishing, from your boat or with one of their professional charter captains, you'll find it all at Dolphin Island Marina on Dolphin Island at the foot of the bridge.
Tips from a professional coming up on Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World.
Have you ever wanted to disappear into the woods? Have you ever wanted to tie your own flies, but never taken the time? Have you ever wanted to speak turkey? And you belong at Bass Pro Shops. Every week, we offer free skills workshops to help you get started. See the store or go to BassPro.com for more information. Bass Pro Shops, your adventure starts here.
When a professional guide finds the gear that fits their needs, they stop looking. They avoid gee-whiz technology because their gear has to perform. They adapt add-ins that make the gear they already have even more useful. But expect them to have the best fish finders and electronics they can afford. If it's not top of the top of the line, they'll probably explain that it's the best suited for their needs. Being aware of what suits your need versus satisfying your wants can save lots of money. Fishing guides have the latest technologies because you're paying them to catch fish. But much of their fishing tackle will be time-tested and well-maintained. If you show up with a brand new tackle bag and a new fishing rod and reel, good guides will hand you one of their rods and say, "Try this." Listen to them. They've seen it all before. New gear when you can't tie a knot or bait a hook doesn't impress them. I'm Larry Whiteley, and this is Bass Pro Shops Outdoor World.
This is Alabama's Great Days Outdoors, brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Here's your host, Joe Baia.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. Before we left for the break, we were talking with Ammon McKinney all about his dog, Woodrow, and the hundreds of blood trails that they've been on. And we're trying to learn a little something today about Blake breaking down blood trails and making sure that you don't make the same mistakes that Ammon has seen in all of his experience. So Ammon, you know, before we left, we talked really about making sure that deer was down. Go ahead and reload, stay on the deer, and put another round into it if you're not sure. There's no reason not to. But let's assume we've taken the shot. The deer has run off. We think we've hit it. We get down. All right. First question is, what do you feel like is too soon to get down? If that deer's run off, how long do they need to leave before they get down from their stand and go check out that hit site?
Okay. So what I tell people is, if you do not see the deer fall over, and it doesn't matter how far he was when you shot him, give it at least an hour to even go check to see if you hit him. Many times deer are bedded close and or they stop close because they're hurting on a shot that isn't fatal. And they may be 40 or 50 yards from where you shot them. So I always tell people, at least give them an hour. That'll at least give them time to get out, if they're going to, or lay up and die if it's not a good shot. But most deer that are shot with a good shot, a lethal shot, die quick. Right, so they're going to die within maybe 150 yards,
right?
At a full sprint. I know there's always the case of that one that, you know, may have gone further on a perfect lung shot. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, in general, most good shots, archery or with a rifle or a firearm, that the animal's going to die quick.
All right, Ammon. So we've waited an hour. We get down. We go to the hit site. And I want you real quick, just tell me, when we get to that hit site, if we find nothing, what are the potential, what type of shots have we potentially made?
Well, if it's a long shot, you know, 200 to 400 yards, you may not be looking in the right spot, first of all. And second of all, it doesn't always mean that it's a miss. If the deer's close within 75 yards and you don't find anything where the deer was standing, that's okay. That's the close shots have a lot higher probability of actually having been hit, even if you don't find any sign right there. The long shots, you don't find any sign, you might want to look around because there's a higher chance that you haven't hit the deer.
All right. What about white hair? Let's say we find white hair at the hit site.
Okay, so in generally speaking, when people are aiming at a deer, white hair only exists in basically one area of the body, and that's underneath. So if you find white hair, you know, if it's longer white hair, you're probably looking more towards the gut shot, maybe the rear legs. Could be the inside of any of the legs, depending on the angle that the deer was standing and how you were aiming. So that's
possibly a little leg, maybe even grazing the brisket, something like that.
Yes, more in the gut. They have a lot of brown hair up under the brisket. White hair is in the gut and inside the legs.
All right, what about bone?
Bone, 95% of the time, if that deer's not dead within 30 yards, then that's going to be a leg shot. It's right. Normally going to be right around the brisket down to the elbow.
What about
the next joint down?
What about gut matter?
Gut matter, that's a lethal shot every time. The deer will die. It's a gut shot. You might have, you know, snuck in some vitals, other vital organs, because the gut is very vital, you know, such as a liver or one lung sort of thing, but definitely, you know, gut shot.
All right. What about dark blood versus bright red blood?
Oh, that's kind of I've seen both on all sorts of different shots. And so people normally ask me, what kind of blood does this look like? And I tell them, it doesn't really matter. It could have been hit anywhere. Brighter blood is normally oxygenated blood, even if it's got bubbles in it, and that does not mean it's a lung shot at all. I've seen them bleed out of the back leg and have bubbles in the blood. Seen them bleed out of the front leg and in the neck and have bubbles in the blood. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's a lung hit. Most of the time, if you can't find your deer, then it's almost always not a lung hit.
That makes sense. Okay, so we've gotten to the hit site. We know generally what kind of hit we've got. Let's talk about next steps. What type of hits do you recommend somebody just immediately back out and call a dog?
Well, I'll never say that you have to call a dog, that on any particular shot, because there are still many shots, even, you know, if the rear leg was hit or a gut shot, where it's possible to track the deer with your own eyes and follow blood. So, you know, I'll never say that you have to just, you know, get out and call a dog. Now, some people enjoy the experience of walking behind the dog. Some people don't want to have to crawl on their hands and knees and look for blood. And I'll never do that again, as long as, you know, people have dogs around that do this stuff. So that's one way of looking at it. If you know a good dog in your area and you kind of question the shot at all, then it's not something that you have to, try and do on your own. You can call a dog in but a dog is going to make very quick work of the shots an experienced dog is going to make very quick work of the shots that
may take a little longer to find a deer, the ones that don't just die within sight.
What type of those hits should we just go ahead and take up the track? I mean, personally, if I go down there and I see bright red blood, dark blood, any kind of blood, I usually go ahead and start tracking it. So is there anything that when you see it, you know, you would say, look, personally, I'm going to back out, because obviously you've got a dog, but when you see it, that you're just going to back out and go ahead and get that dog to come in?
So most of the time, hunters know, especially bow hunters, know if their shot was, you know, in the right spot or not. So if there's any doubt in where you hit the deer, like, oh, I don't know if that's a good shot, I would not chance it. Just get out and, you know, call a dog. It may be dead close, but if it's not, you're going to be glad you had it, you know, the first time, in case it's still alive. Second of all, if you ever find bone, I would back out and call a dog on that, because that's just not a kill shot. You're going to need a dog that can run a deer down and bay it up and have it killed. Fortunately, in the state of Alabama, that's legal. And so we take every opportunity to recover deer, and we never really want to leave a wounded one out for the coyotes. And if they can, if they're hurt bad enough that dog can bay them up and be dispatched properly, then that's always a good thing to do and get your deer.
So we've made that decision to call that dog in. What can we do as hunters, if we're committed to getting a dog, what can we do to make that dog's job easier?
If you have an experienced dog coming in, I don't know if there's anything you can do to make it tough, really. But there aren't just tons of, you know, very accomplished and experienced dogs all over. So, you know, not red searching with your friends and waiting, you know, 24 hours to call a dog is best. Most, we talked about, you know, dogs can find deer after longer periods of time, but if you ask any handler, they would probably rather be contacted in the first 6 to 12 hours after the shot to try and make that happen. The odds are just higher, and there's all little factors that can happen as far as, you know, the dog being able to find it or not. And so, you know, the sooner the better. Don't wait 24 hours and then just expect the dog to do it, because those are still, you know, difficult for a lot of dogs. And if you got to go past 150 yards following blood, probably not a great shot, and you should, you know, call a dog in to, you can just back out. You don't want to jump the deer and have it just run off after it's been, you know, licking its wound clean and trying to heal up a little bit. That never makes you feel good. And then you think there's no use in having a dog since the deer is still alive. And most people think that you got to have blood to find, for a dog to find the deer. And that's not true at all either. And, you know, the dogs, the experienced ones, don't have to have blood. So don't feel, oh, well, there's no blood, there's no sense in calling in a dog. That's not the way that works.
Well, Ammon, we have covered a lot of ground today, man. I really appreciate your insight on blood trailing. I wish we had more time to talk more about it, but if folks are unsure about their shot and they want to get a dog on it, where do you recommend they go?
Best and easiest way is through Facebook, social media, Alabama Blood Trailing Network. A lot of people and numbers listed.
All right, Ammon McKinney. Ammon, have a good rest of your season, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for us this week. We'll see y'all next week.